Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Haunted History. I'm your host, Megan, and I'm here to bring you all things spooky, eerie, and haunted with a little sprinkle of history. I know all you summer lovers out there are going to curse me right now, but it's soon spooky season. I know, not what you want to hear, but I really do think that it's the best, and the faster it gets here, the better, because as I'm sure you've guessed it, it's my favorite season. Followed by winter. Yes, a very unpopular opinion, but spring and summer are definitely my least favorite, completely overrated to me. And it sounds wild, I know, but in the fall and winter, I literally come alive. I really don't know what it is, but my creativity is at an all-time high, my imagination runs wild, my sleep starts being regulated again, and overall, I just feel a sense of comfort and happiness. It also happens to be the best time for haunted history, and we're going to save the spookiest stories for my favorite month, October, and you better believe we are going to have a wild Halloween episode. I also wanted to very quickly give a big shout out to Chloe, our new writer and researcher. She is truly the backbone of haunted history. She researches and fact checks each episode, and together we are working on an amazing and juicy lineup for all of you that I am confident you will love. We dipped our toes into the haunted history of Romania when we explored the Hoia Bashu Forest back in episode 3. If you haven't given that episode a listen yet, I highly suggest that you do. But maybe it's actually Romania's Bran Castle, linked to the mythologized figure of Vlad the Impaler, that has earned the most notoriety in the region over the course of history. Some of you may or may not know, but Vlad the Impaler was, in turn, partly used as inspiration for Bram Stoker's Gothic novel, Dracula. Let's begin with a little bit of history. In many, if not all, historical recountings, context really is key to better understand the full significance of a legendary place. When it comes to Bran Castle, understanding its legacy of darkness helps shed a little bit of light onto why it has such a hold over our imaginations still to this day. The origins of Bran Castle can be traced all the way back to a medieval stronghold nestled in the foreboding Transylvanian Alps. And a stronghold was essentially a very, very well-guarded castle, or it could be a tower or other building. And it was usually the home of a king or other important lord of the land. Bran Castle got its name from the nearby Bran Pass, which was a trade route that divided the Carpathian Mountains with the Romanian counties of Brasov and Ajeis, laying on either side. The land itself is incredibly unforgiving. Craggy cliffs, dense coniferous forests, and foggy mountaintops. In fact, the mountains are also home to other folklore, like the legend of the White Mists. It is, in every sense, the dark forest of all your favorite fairy tales. The first structure built near Bran Pass was a fortress built back in 1211 by the Knights of the Teutonic Order. The structure wasn't held for very long, though. By 1377, the King of Hungary, Louis I, told the Transylvanian Saxons of the Brasov region to build a castle in its place in order to support the inevitable attack of Ottoman Turks, who were very quickly headed northward. During the 14th century, Transylvania was a voivodate of Hungary. And I know what you're thinking, what is a voivodate? I had to look this up too, including how to pronounce it, which I'm sure I am still not getting quite right. So basically, a voivodate is the Central and Eastern European equivalent of a province. The semi-independent ruler of a voivodate is called a voivode. So keep this in mind because we're going to come back to it later. So Bran Castle was built in this very unforgiving region with the intent of being a muster point while they defended the land from the onslaught of invaders. So by now we can really see clearly that the area was quite literally a central hub of conflict, misery, and human suffering. And factions at war, both from outside forces and within the voivodate, would continue for many years to come. Now that we know a little bit of the history of the area, let's get to know Vlad III Dracula, also known as Vlad Tepes, but who you most likely know as Vlad the Impaler. And just a quick side note, I'm going to do my best to keep pronunciation on point, so please bear with me. Born sometime between 1428 and 1431, he was the son of Vlad II Dracul, who we're going to call Vlad Dracul in this episode. He was the voivode of Wallachia, of the House of Draculesti. When young Vlad was born, as we mentioned earlier, the land was already riddled with conflict and contempt. Christian kingdoms in Central and Eastern Europe were actively at war with the Muslim Ottoman Turks, who were determined to conquer them. And inside the Christian voivodates, conflicts also began to brew as beliefs of Catholicism and Orthodox Christianity clashed. In Wallachia, the social system consisted of the peasant class, who were ruled by the Wallachian elite called the Boyars. The Boyars, in turn, were overseen by a voivode. Voivodes in Wallachia were highly disposable at the time, as they were constantly and quickly being overthrown for the gains of the dominant Boyar families, as well as the warring Hungarian kingdom and the Ottoman Empire. As I said earlier, these were very tumultuous times all around. In order to retain power, Wallachian rulers often needed to shift their alliances to earn favor with whichever faction was deemed more powerful at the time. So this allowed for the Boyars, who remained loyal to them, to stay alive, and for the peasant class to remain free from enslavement. It was essentially a real-life Game of Thrones. During one of these political dances, Vlad Dracul, along with young Vlad and his brother, were imprisoned and held hostage during a diplomatic visit to the Ottoman Empire. Vlad Dracul was eventually released back to Wallachia, but young Vlad and his brother were held captive for 5 years. The details of young Vlad's captivity are uncertain, but it's believed that he was educated in the arts and philosophy and even retained his Christian faith. He was most likely being molded to become a future puppet voivode, one who would give money and resources to an Ottoman ruler. However, some sources say that young Vlad was also tortured and that he may have even witnessed some Ottoman enemies being impaled. And this could easily be the influence of his future decisions. During the time that young Vlad was held hostage, his father was usurped and murdered by the Boyars of the rival house of Dinesti. It's said that Vlad Dracul was murdered by Vladislav II on the banks of the Danube River as he tried to flee. Legend would have it that Vlad Dracul's right-hand man went to the Ottoman Empire to inform young Vlad in person of his father's murder and the betrayal of some of the Boyar families, and that Vlad's older brother, Mircea, who had remained in Wallachia, had his eyes burnt in their sockets and was ultimately buried alive. It's often thought that it was at this moment that young Vlad began plotting his return to Wallachia, filled with rage and fueled by the betrayal of the Hungary-backed Boyar factions. And we can also assume that he was greatly affected by his time in captivity. So when the opportunity came to retake his kingdom in 1448, he marched ruthlessly on Wallachia. Over the course of his many sporadic rules over Wallachia, Vlad earned a reputation as being a cunning and incredibly cruel man who would truly stop at nothing to defend his land and his people. But how did young Vlad become Vlad the Impaler? And where does Bran Castle fit into this mix? We are about to find out. If you are anything like me, I have a massive sweet tooth and I love, love, love tasty gourmet sweets, either for myself to nibble on at home when the craving hits, to serve my guests at a party, or even to gift during the holidays. And if you're lucky enough to live on the beautiful Sunshine Coast, I promise, Coast Cookie Company has exactly what you need. Founded by a mom of two with a passion for baking, Coast Cookie Company creates delicious gourmet cookies, like seriously next level cookies, using real European butter, local premium chocolate, and organic local eggs, with flavors like Belgian white chocolate pistachio and double chocolate salted caramel brown butter with roasted pecans. It's easy to see why these cookies are a hit with literally everyone. But they don't stop at cookies. They also make delicious and stunning custom cakes and cupcakes that will elevate and wow the guests at your next celebration. Check out at Coast Cookie Company on Instagram to see some of their delicious treats, or visit coastcookiecompany.ca to learn more. Young Vlad had already conquered and was exiled from Wallachia, but it didn't stop him from marching on what he perceived as his kingdom once again. Young Vlad challenged Vladislav II to a duel. His council thought this was a terrible idea. It was a bold move, but one that would ultimately cement his position as a warrior who was not afraid of combat. He would be seen as a man of honor, and this paid off because he won the duel. He beheaded Vladislav, finally avenging his family. He was very eager to prove that he wasn't a puppet of the Hungary or Ottoman Empire, but in order to be seen as the rightful ruler of Wallachia, he knew that he'd have to eliminate any internal threats as well. Shortly after retaking Wallachia, he began lancing the boyars that were still loyal to Vladislav. And after doing this, honor quickly morphed into tyranny. A gruesome but very good example of why he would soon become known as Vlad the Impaler was that it was said he invited 200 boyars and their families to an Easter banquet. After dinner, young Vlad's men seized the women and the elderly and had them all impaled. Now, truthfully, for a long time, I thought impalement was a stake through the heart or the chest. It's not. It's really 1,000 times more horrific, and I'm not going to describe it, but you can give a Google if you're curious. What's also interesting is that this really seemed to be the trend, I guess you could call it, in medieval times. Invite your enemies to an event and then slaughter them. It reminds me of the Black Dinner in Scotland. That happened around the same time, and there's a few others. Very interesting. So after the women and the elderly were horrifically impaled, he forced the men into slave labor. And this is when young Vlad becomes known as Vlad the Impaler. As for the link to Bran Castle, I'm sorry to say that it is purely myth and legend. Many dissidents of Wallachia during the time of Vlad the Impaler did seek refuge in Transylvania, and so maybe he would have chased them down in that region, and maybe that's where the connection was made. It was also rumored that Vlad was imprisoned in Bran Castle for 2 years before retaking his homeland, and in 1459, Vlad would have gone through Bran Pass to attack Brasov, where he settled a conflict with Saxon merchants by, you guessed it, ruthlessly impaling them. During this time, printed documents began circulating, talking about all of the violence and the brutality of Vlad the Impaler, and of course, this news spread like wildfire. But it wasn't just his horrific methods of torture, but also stories of cannibalism and repeated instances of him drinking his victims' blood. And so this very quickly became part of the myth. But it's important to note that no historians have ever been able to conclusively prove that Vlad the Impaler lived in or even made use of Bran Castle during his lifetime. So why are the two often spoken of in the same breath? So much so that most people, myself included, until this episode, thought that Bran Castle used to be Vlad's. The answer lies with a character that has captivated our imaginations since his creation, the ghoulish Count Dracula. It's said that Stoker was inspired by Vlad the Impaler when he created the character of Dracula. Apparently, after reading a rare book titled An Account of the Principalities of the Wallachia and Moldavia, which was written by a British diplomat in 1820, Stoker zeroed in on one of the footnotes that described the essence of the voivode Dracula, which said that in the Wallachian language, Dracul meant devil, while in Hungarian, it means dragon. In Stoker's 1897 novel, Dracula, Count Dracula, a vampire, lives in a Transylvanian castle that, like Bran Castle, is set on a precipice and has a spectacular view over an endless dark forest and a deep pass. It reads, "On the very edge of a terrible precipice, with occasionally a deep rift where there is a chasm, with silver threads where the rivers wind in deep gorges through the forests." Bran Castle, which was built by the Teutonic Order, became a customs house as well as a fortress before being passed along to Queen Marie of Romania, where it was eventually used as a summer residence and restored to its current glory. The castle is deemed by Romania as being the only castle that fits Stoker's description of Count Dracula's eerie home. And today, it remains a dark tourist attraction due to its supposed hauntings. As for the hauntings, Queen Marie made Bran Castle a place of beauty, filled with light and life, so much that even after she passed, her ghost was rumored to still appear in the castle and stroll into the surrounding gardens from time to time. According to local tour guides, Bran Castle is also haunted by medieval peasants who witnessed or were subjected to endless cruelty. The castle even has several torture chambers. But were they used by Vlad the Impaler to inflict untold horrors onto his detractors? Every year, A&E organizes an event called the World's Biggest Ghost Hunt, where groups around the world live stream paranormal investigations at various historically haunted sites. And in 2021, a woman named Peggy McGuire, a veteran paranormal investigator with 40 years of experience under her belt, was awarded the opportunity to put her skills to test at Bran Castle. Her mission? To ask Vlad the Impaler himself if he had ever set foot in Bran Castle. By using paranormal investigation tools, like a dowsing rod, McGuire went into the torture chamber of the castle, which, by the way, was complete with an Iron Maiden from the 1400s, to ask the spirit of Vlad the Impaler if he was ever there. If you don't know what an Iron Maiden is, it's essentially a human-shaped cabinet with two doors that open in the front and spikes on the doors that face towards the inside. So the person would be put in, the doors would be closed, and the spikes would pierce into the person who was trapped in there to endure it. And let's also talk about a dowsing rod for a minute. According to a ghost hunting supplier in the US, a dowsing rod is a rod made of brass or silver, and it's a sensitive tool that can be affected by thought, air, energy, and space, and can also be affected by the external world and energy properties of different things, including spiritual energy. So according to how the rods move in the space being investigated, outwards meant yes and inward meant no, McGuire concluded that yes, Vlad the Impaler was indeed held prisoner at Bran Castle at some point. In 2016, Robin and Tammy Varma, a brother and sister from Halifax, Nova Scotia, won a contest hosted by Airbnb. The prize? Spending a night in Bran Castle. The pair were welcomed to the estate by Dacre Stoker, Bram Stoker's great-grandnephew, treated to a lavish meal complete with wine, and they even slept in, get this, velvet-lined coffins. They described it as being perfectly terrifying, with a foggy mist curling around the property and even some stormy weather. But according to Tammy Varma, the really chilling part of their experience didn't come from what they saw, but what they didn't see. She says, quote, "We made it through the night. It was probably the most spectacular night you could have ever imagined. You could feel the evil in the walls. You knew you weren't alone. We may have been the only physical guests there, but there were certainly invisible guests among us." End quote. And honestly, after that description, I can see why so many tourists want to visit there. It really does sound incredible. As we touched on earlier, in the 15th century, the word Dracul meant dragon. The moniker was given to Vlad's father after he had received the Order of the Dragon by the King of Hungary. The order was of Christian military intent and aimed to beat back the increasing Ottoman threat. Young Vlad, as Vlad Dracul's son, received the moniker of Vlad Dracula, meaning son of Dracul. In modern Romanian, the word Drac means devil. When Bram Stoker wrote Dracula, he meant for Dracula to be a stand-in for the devil. So now it's much easier to see how Vlad Dracula's persona intertwines with Count Dracula. The actual link between Bran Castle and Vlad the Impaler is sadly slim to non-existent, except of course according to Peggy. However, Stoker's Count Dracula was probably a blend of many acrimonious characters, one of them almost certainly being Vlad the Impaler. As a historical figure who has been seen throughout history as a bloodthirsty menace, it's definitely not that crazy to make this assumption, especially given Stoker's own notes on the subject. It should be said, however, that Stoker never actually visited Transylvania. As for the castle itself, well, it doesn't really need to have a direct tie to a real-life vampire to carry the weight of its haunted history. Being built on top of a land deep in conflict, and having been used as both a stronghold and sanctuary in its lifetime, I feel like we can confidently say that the castle is filled with many spiritual energies collected throughout its lifetime. Vlad Dracula spent a lot of time and energy into crafting his reputation and persona, which seemed to spill out of the confines of the castle and onto the whole world for centuries to come. The allure of being feared to the point of being supernatural definitely gave him an edge over his enemies. Because who could possibly be foolish enough to engage a being that was not only immortal, but immoral? I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. I don't know about you, but I think I'm going to go buy a copy of Stoker's Dracula, and that's going to be my October book of the month. I'll keep you updated on my thoughts after I finish. See you all next week for another episode of Haunted History.